This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, opening day is just a couple of days away, Dave. I cannot wait for this baseball season to start. And a man who I know is probably just as anxious to talk about everything that's going on in the world of baseball was once one of the great pitchers, had one of the great leg kicks. He had that knee up by his chin. It was very distinctive. He was very, very animated out there, and he was a lot of fun to watch and even more fun to talk to. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. You see him on Fox Sports as a baseball analyst as well as Apple TV. He is the D-Train, Dontrell Willis, with us. How are you, man?
I'm really good, and you're absolutely right. I'm super excited about this season, and a lot of great storylines, especially about these Seattle Mariners that look well constructed this year once again.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement. By the way, can you still get that knee up as high as you did in that windup?
You know what? You know, I got to be honest. Once a day, someone asks me to do the leg kick, and it's anticlimactic. But you know, I still can do it. You know what I mean? My hamstrings are a little tighter than they once was back in my 20s. But once a day, someone asks me if I can do it, and I do it for them in the most random of places, whether it's Kinko's or on the street or what have you. So, you know, but it's pretty cool, and I'm always honored that I had somewhat of an impact in the game, and people enjoy watching me.
Well, your baseball cap was pretty iconic too, Dontrell. So,
well, you know that's so crazy? I thought it was straight the whole time. I thought it was straight on my head the whole time until I saw photos. But, you know, us lefties are a little messed up.
Hey, before we get into the Mariners and everything else, I was just telling these guys before you came on that I interviewed you. I think you were with the Tigers at the time, and there are certain guys right. You talk to throughout your career that you talk to them and you go, man, if this guy wants a career in media when he's done, he's going to have it. And you were one of those guys. I remember talking to you back then. Was the transition automatic and natural for you once you stopped playing that you thought about getting into the media, or what's that transition been like?
It's been wonderful, and a lot like baseball. You know, you study and you prepare, but you also learn something new every time you kind of go out there, kind of like my golf game and what have you. But, I'm blessed to work with some of the best in our field. I mean, I work with Kevin Burkhardt and Joe Davis and Wayne Rondazzo, who I call the game with. So, you know, kind of like my baseball career, I just have to not mess it up, you know. You know, so it's fun, and, you know, and I still get to be involved in the game that I know and love. And I love where the game is going as far as the athletic ability and excitement. So it's fun to be a part of it and look at it from a media standpoint.
Well, Dontrell, tell us what you see in the Mariners. We just got back from spring training down there. Feel like they have one of the better starting rotations, a little banged up in the bullpen. But what do you think about the Seattle Mariners going into the 2024 season?
You know, I'm super excited about these guys, you know, and everybody's picking them as their sleeper. And I'm like, well, they're not a sleeper if everybody's kind of picking them, you know what I mean, to be impactful in the American League. But if you look at that rotation between Castillo, Gilbert, Kirby, Miller, and Wu, it's like, man, they can throw out quality every single day. Scott Service is a great manager for that club because he never panics. You know what I mean? He always feels like, you know, he's in control of the ball game. I love that ad of getting a Jorge Polanco. He's a guy that's a quality at bat guy. And I thought last year, when you look at the Mariners, you know, they lost a lot of close ball games because there was a little more swing and miss that Service wanted. And so in key times, you know, they couldn't really put the ball in play. But if you look how it's constructed, man, I mean, they bring the captain Mitch Haniger back into the fold. I mean, Mitch Garver, Cal Raleigh. I mean, this is a deep lineup, and they're going to have to be in the American League West because obviously the Houston Astros ain't going nowhere, and they have the world champion, you know, Rangers in that division, and obviously they have to play Mike Trout. But, you know, T-Mobile Park gets rocking in the summer. That's the one thing I love about Seattle, you know, and so they do well at home, and I'm super excited to see how it folds, especially a team that consistently wins 85 games and up and unfortunately misses the playoffs, which is unheard of. But I think they're going to have a good roster, and I think it's going to be a good run for the M's this year.
Hey, Dontrell, when you look at this starting rotation, there are some managers and analysts out there that really are into the, you know, righty, lefty, righty, lefty. These are all right-handers, 1 through 5. Do you look at that as being a problem at all?
I would if I was trying to make the team. But, if you're looking as far as pure stuff, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, the one thing about it, they all give you different looks from the right side. You know what I mean? And they have different weapons. You know, it's Castillo with the riding fastball and changeup, and Gilbert that can get swing and miss at the top of the zone as well. So even though they're all right-handed, man, you know, they're not afraid to attack the zone. And with the M's being athletic defensively, and especially in that ballpark, I think it's going to pay off dividends. And even though they're a little banged up in the bullpen, I think, you know, Scott Service is going to ride those guys early in the season to be able to get to the sixth, maybe the seventh inning, depending on the pitch count, to make the game small for him and hopefully get that nasty ball to Munoz, because if they get to him, man, it's a wrap.
Dontrell, when you go into a game and you're talking to the pitchers, what kind of information are you looking for? What are you trying to get out of these guys?
You know, as much as we talk about analytics, I kind of like to talk to pitchers about the nuances and what do they see on the mound and what do they feel. I mean, you can give anybody playbooks, but when your heart rate is up and, you know, you're in thousands, front of thousands of people, what do you see to be able to attack the hitter and expose them? And so, you know, just listening to the guys about the nuances of the game and that's the one thing that, you can never really get away from, because you don't know what a guy's feeling on the mound. And so you could tell him, hey, you got to throw this fastball up. But if he doesn't see that against the hitter like a Mike Trout, he's not going to be able to execute that at a high level. And so I just love talking to guys about the nuances of the game and what they feel and how they feel they can be successful on the mound.
You know, one of the problems, I guess, out here, Dontrell, in the early months anyway, for hitters, is they talk about the marine layer and the ball doesn't carry very well and becomes a frustration, which obviously for pitchers is a great thing. Is that anything you've been out here before and pitched in this park? Is that something you notice? I don't know what time of year you were pitching here, but is that something you know coming in?
Absolutely. But, I'm from Northern California, so I know all about a marine layer pitching in San Francisco. It didn't really help me, you know what I mean, especially that ball flying through the mist. But, again, there's something to that. And if you're a hitter and you square up a baseball, especially in that ballpark, and, you know, they get it to the warning track, that can be very frustrating. And so you see a hitter trying harder and harder, and that might expose them to the slider, or if their swing gets long, it might expose them to high-velocity fastball. But you just got to continue to stay within yourself and try to barrel the baseball and hope that everything evens out. But easier said than done when you have 500-600 at-bats and you're looking at your average. And, you know, I felt like Julio in the beginning of last year, he was trying to carry the team and trying to generate things and overswinging. So he was hitting about 240 in the beginning of the season. I love the move that Scott Service did by moving him out of the leadoff spot and put him in the three-hole, because you saw his shoulders kind of, you know, come down and say, you know, I got to trust my teammates. And all of a sudden after the All-Star break, he hit 300. And so, you know, there's something to that. But at the same time, you still have to square up the baseball and use the whole field, because that's a big outfield in T-Mobile Park.
Dontrell, you mentioned a little bit about the rotation, and not asking for an exact rank or anything, but as far as this rotation goes, are they top five, top 10, you think?
Oh, no. They're top five. And that front three with Castillo, Kirby, and Gilbert, they can go up against anybody in baseball. I don't think anybody wants to get in a gunslinging match with these guys, especially at home. I mean, they pitch with a lot of confidence at home. And again, like I talked about, the different looks. There's something about this group that screams to me mound presence. And when I was on the Marlins, you know, I was the worst guy in the rotation. I mean, we had Josh Beckett and guys like that threw 100 miles an hour, and Brad Pinning, and all of a sudden you see this lefty throwing 91. You know, the teams wanted to see me, you know. But again, we all had different looks. And once we started to have rhythm with the rotation, we felt like we can win any matchup against anybody, because they trusted our staff to win that matchup on the mound. And so this reminds me a lot of that type of staff, where they have stuff and they know that win or lose, it's going to go through the rotation, and you kind of relish in having that responsibility. So I'm super excited to see this rotation, and hopefully they stay healthy, which they did last year for the most part.
I'm curious, Dontrell, as a pitcher looking at this rotation, who stands out to you, or what is there an element of one of these guys in terms of their stuff that stands out? For me, it's Kirby and his control. I mean, he doesn't walk anybody. He's got more starts every year than he does walks on the season. It's amazing, his command.
Well, you know, that's the biggest thing. And if you look at his command, The biggest thing is he throws strikes with everything at high velocity. So it's not like he's just thumbing the baseball up there. You know what I mean? He's 96 to 98 miles an hour or so, and he's no petit filet. He's a guy that can swing this baseball. So, but for me, it's Castillo because he just has that it factor. I mean, he wants to go up against anybody's ace, and really he'll fist pump you in the second inning, the third inning, the fourth inning. And so when I got a chance to meet him, he told me, he's like, man, you're one of my favorite pitchers. And I said, man, we got to work on your heroes, man, but I appreciate that. but again, Castillo's my favorite guy in the rotation by far.
Hey, Dontrell, from the time that that you retired, what do you see that are the big changes since then? It's been a few years now. Is it a certain pitch? You know, we always hear about Matt Brash and how he's just got this ridiculous right. slider. But what are some of the things that you've noticed that have changed?
Man, these kids are stronger. I mean, they're coming up. I mean, obviously, Julio Rodriguez, who's 12 years old, and already seems like he's been in the big leagues for 10 years. I mean, the Bryce Harpers, the Acunas. I mean, if you're looking at these guys, the Juan Sotos. I mean, you would think Juan Soto was in the league for 10 years. I mean, he's 25, 26 years old. The strength of the player, the understanding of movement prep, body movement. I mean, I remember when it used to be cool to throw 95 miles an hour. Now they're saying it's the average fastball. You know, and so the strength of these guys, I mean, it's truly amazing to see that. I mean, my daughter's 15 and she plays soccer, and I saw her flip up a 40-pound kettlebell, and I'm like, you know how to use a kettlebell? And she was like, yeah. I was like, Jesus, what's going on? Like, you know, so they're understanding a little bit better than our generation about just how to get stronger, your core, your flexibility, and things like that. And that's why you keep seeing, not only in baseball, but in all sports, records are just getting broken and broken and broken. And so I love seeing that, you know, the intent to be the best, the intent to be healthy for as long as you can. And I think the game is in good hands. So, I mean, these guys are going to be around. They're going to be stars for a very, very long time. And so I just love the energy and the intent of being the best you can be on the field.
Dontrell, is there an element of today's game, whether it's analytics or just the advances in you know, medical, in how they treat injuries and things like that, that you look at and go, man, I wish that existed when I was pitching?
Well, I definitely can, because I can't bend my elbow straight. So, you know what I mean? I wish I could. But you play to the style of the times. You know, if you look at football, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, I mean, they played with no teeth. They were broken up, you know what I mean? And so for me and my generation, you know, throwing 200 innings was like a badge of honor. Like, you had to throw 200 innings to consider yourself an ace, you know what I mean? And that's not necessarily the case, you know, this time around the game of baseball. So, you know, health is wealth, obviously, and obviously it's an investment for these stars, especially when you're signing these guys to long-term 7-year, 8-year deals for max money. So you do the best to keep these guys healthy and efficient for a very long time. But I think that's the difference between, you know, my generation. I can't believe I'm saying that as a 42-year-old man, but my generation of playing and what you see now.
I'd kill to be 42, Dontrell.
You know what? Don't worry about it. I'm right at that age where I got to start stretching out when I wake up, too. So that's right at that age. You know, I got to start stretching out and getting on the elliptical and stuff like that. But it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we really admire Cal Raleigh around here. His leadership has just grown every year, and just what he means to that rotation and how he manages the staff, and just kind of talk a little bit about Cal, but also just that relationship that you had with your catcher over the years.
It's everything. It's everything. It's a trust. It's a belief. He's a general back there. He's a wall. He works extremely hard. You can tell, you know, the pitchers trust his game calling and where he guides them. He comes up with a ton of big home runs. I mean, you want to talk about, he's not a petit filet. He is not a petit filet when I saw him in person. I mean, and so, yeah, you know, and he backspins that ball. He don't care about a marine layer or any type of layer, you know what I mean, when he squares up that baseball. And so the leadership and him with the flair of dramatics with big home runs, he's gonna be a staple back there for a very, very long time. And so I love watching him back there. And, you know, he's so calm and collective, and you need that type of personality back there, especially when the game speeds up for a pitcher. He says, hey, everything's all good, man. Just let me guide you. And when I get in the dugout, I'm going to hit you a 2-run home run, and we're going to shake hands later. So he's probably one of the more favorite guys in that lineup, him and Crawford, just because the makeup that they have and the intangibles that they put around that necessarily don't go on the back of a baseball card.
Hey, Dontrell, I'm curious to get your impressions of Scott Service. You know how it is in any hometown. The fan base will find right. The moments that he made a decision that didn't work. And, oh, he doesn't know how to use a bullpen. He doesn't know how to do this, that, or the other. It doesn't matter the city. But I'm just curious from the outside, looking in at what he's done with this team. What are your impressions of Service as a manager?
I love him. I mean, he's very honest with the media. I love talking to him. And that's the one cool thing about you know, we have our own kind of intimate manager time. I mean, and you don't just stumble on being this is, I believe it's ninth year being a manager. You don't just stumble on doing that, especially in this day and age, especially if you're the head coach of a college team or anywhere. If you have a couple down years, they'll pay you to go home. You know what I mean? So he's earned that right to be able to make those decisions. And, you know, you never hear a bad word about him. And for him, I mean, he's come up and basically done every job being a scout or you know, a farm director. So he knows the game through and through. And I think because of that, that gives him kind of a confidence to say, hey, there's no panic here, man. There's a long ball game. I mean, it's a long season. I mean, last year, the Mariners, I believe, were in first place in September. And then all of a sudden, they ran into a gauntlet where they had to play the Astros and the Dodgers and the Rangers, you know, 13 games in a row, go 4-9, and then they get bounced. But that's still not a poor season. You know what I mean? That's just an unfortunate thing of the schedule. So he's very, very good about, like, you know, telling guys what they need to be told and respectfully and putting them in the best possible chance to be successful. So I really enjoy who he is as a manager and as a teacher of the game.
Hey, Dontrell, I think one of the things I miss playing the NFL and, you know, some of the characters over the years that you really miss. Who were some of those guys during your career that just stood out to you that were just like nobody else?
Oh, man. I mean, if you looked at that Marlins roster from 2003 on, I mean, they should call us the Florida characters. I mean, you know, it was Miguel Cabrera is the best. I mean, and I'm glad, you know, towards the end of his career, people started to see really his personality besides his Hall of Fame talent, you know, and guys like that. Jimmy Rollins, a guy I grew up with, you know, cool, calm, and collective. And so it was a lot of guys that just had fun, and you kind of were envious of them because it's still a hard game, but they made it look so easy even when they struggle, you know what I mean? And so there's a lot of guys that I love playing. I mean, Vlad Sr., you know, who I threw a fastball over his head and he barreled it for a double. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like, you know, it was just fun to play against guys like that. You know what I mean? And say that you're on the field against some of the best guys in the world. And so, but I'm sure if you ask a lot of people that question about me, they have some really, really good stories about some of the things that happened to me. But no, there was a lot of good people that I've come across to that I'm still friends with to this day that just really enjoyed playing game of baseball and being themselves at the same time.
Hey, are you a guy, Dontrell, that likes the DH in both leagues now? Because you spent a good chunk of your career, obviously, in the National League, and you hit. I think you had 9 career home runs. So you could hit. Is that something you like, or do you like watching the game now where there's a DH in both leagues?
No, I don't like it. I don't like it. But it's not because I enjoyed hitting. It was really more so I enjoyed being able to factor in the ball game. My best year was 2005, and I won 22 games. I think I scored 16 times. So, you know, learning the style and helping myself and bunting and turning over the lineup to, you know, a Hanley Ramirez, you know, Dan Uggla, and Miguel Cabrera, I mean, that's 90 home runs behind me. I'm swinging at everything that pitcher's throwing it because he doesn't want to face my guys 5 times. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just the thought process. And also at the World Series level, the managing style, you know what I mean? The National League manager, how does the American League manager, you know, pull the pitcher or sub him or put the guy off the bench? And so, you know, now both sides have the same manager style, but I always like seeing the World Series and how the opposing managers dealt with being in opposing ballparks. So, but, you know, the game's a game, and we got tired of seeing those poor bats and some of the star pitchers running the bases and getting hurt. And so, you know, I kind of understood the move.
Dontrell, the last year, the moves that they made really went off well. Everybody loved it, but it is a little bit tougher as far as the timing goes for pitchers. Is that something you embraced right away, or did you get used to it as the season went on? You think it's something that's good now?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, it was too much. It was too much excess fat on the steak, if you know what I mean. It was like, get in the box. I mean, that was the only time I was ever upset on the field. It's like, I'm not trying to wait here. It's Miami. It's 100 degrees. We don't need to be waiting 15 minutes for every tee time, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. So it was one of those things that was helpful aesthetically. It keeps the fan engaged. And even from a media side of game call, you know, you can stay, you know, intentful into the ball game. And so I do like the pitch clock. Now, once the season started to progress, you can kind of see guys starting to be able to pitch at that fast pace, because guys will throw the ball, you know, every 8 seconds. So that's rapid fire when the game speeds up. So I think this year guys really did a good job of working on the cardio and being able to throw those pitches at that time, because one, you know, you could start to lose energy, and two, you could risk injury if you're not strong enough to be able to do that. And so, but as far as that pitch clock, I really, really enjoy it.
You make any predictions going into the season? Do you have a feel about, all right, I like this team in the National League, this team in the American League, and this is the team I pick as the World Series winner?
Oh, man, you're trying to get me fired on my second day of the season. I like the Rangers. I like the M's. I never want to count out Houston. Baltimore is very intriguing to me. I think Baltimore, the way they play, their style, their athleticism, their ads to getting Corbin. I mean, they're going to be a good ball club. And it's always fun to see my main man Aaron Boone in the Yankees and see where they'll go with the add of Juan Soto. And in the National League, you know, I mean, it's the same old people. You know what I mean? It's the Phillies. It's the Braves. You know, it's the Dodgers. I'm very intrigued about the San Diego Padres, and really, really intrigued about the Giants. You know, we'll see if the Giants can score some runs in that Marine layer up there. That pitching staff with Webb and guys like that, like, they're going to be fun to watch. So I'm super excited. I just want to get to it. You know, enough with the spring training. I feel like a player. Like, that 6 weeks in spring training, it's like, all right, this is enough. Let's start getting it where it counts. So it's going to be a fun, fun baseball season once again.
Hey, last one before we let you go, Dontrell. I got to ask you, you brought up the Dodgers and Ohtani. I don't want to ask you about the gambling thing. That'll get figured out. But just in terms of who he is as a player, he's something. I just hammer this, that we've never seen this in our lifetime. We've never seen anybody who is a frontline number one ace pitcher, who is a three-hole hitter, who hits for power. I mean, it's just a combination that has not existed since Babe Ruth, and he's done it at a better level than Babe Ruth. As a guy that did it yourself, what do you think when you see somebody like that?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the compliment, but no, that this guy's a mutant. You know, I might have ran into 9 home runs. You know, this guy is an X-Men. He's just not telling us. You know what I mean? Like, this guy, he can run. He can hit for power. Justin Upton, one of my best friends, he told me, "Train, you got to come to spring training." I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "You got to see Shohei." I'm like, "All right." So I drive all the way down there, and they let me get a field pass, and I'm literally on the cage. And the way he was just flicking the ball off the batter's eye and wowing Mike Trout. I mean, if you can wow Mike Trout, I mean, this is how good this guy is. And so he's everything is advertised. You know, he eats, sleeps, and breathes baseball. And, you know, he's fun to watch. And he loves the game. And he loves being in the bright spot. I mean, obviously, you've seen what he did in the WBC for Team Japan. But, you know, and I think that's a big reason why he moved over to the Dodgers, because he wants to play in the postseason and ultimately have a chance to win a World Series championship. But, you know, he's so good that when he gets out, it's like, wow, dang, I didn't think he was going to get out. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's the bar that he set for himself, and it's Barry Bonds-esque. I mean, it's must-see TV. So as long as he stays healthy, man, I mean, you know, there's already talks right now of him having a chance to be, if he quit today, he'd be a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's how good he is. And so he's fun to watch, and he's great for the game.
Fox Sports analyst, also on Apple TV as well. He was a great conversation as a player and an even better conversation now as a member of the media. Dontrell Willis has been our guest here with Wyman and Bob. Dontrell, really appreciate the time you took with us. An awesome conversation. Hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
There you go. Dontrell Willis again of Fox Sports and Apple TV. Really good stuff. If you didn't catch all of that, it will be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Coming up, we learned a little more today about the Seahawks' new backup quarterback. Tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to Dontrell Willis, who joined us in the previous segment. If you guys missed that conversation, really good stuff out of him. A lot of people texting in, loved his energy, his charisma. He's very good, very good. It'll be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Meanwhile, Sam Howell, the new backup of your Seattle Seahawks at the quarterback spot, was on with Brock and Salk today. Had a few things that they discussed, talked about. He was asked what he thinks he does best as a quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I really think I do a lot of things well. I think just my ability to, you know, get in there and just rally a group of guys and, you know, get those guys around me playing to the best of their ability is one of the things that I do really good. Then I just think I'm a competitor. You know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to give my team a chance to win. And, you know, all I care about is, you know, winning. And no matter what it takes or what I have to do to get it done, I'm going to do it. So I'm just excited that, you know, to learn a new group of guys and go to war with them.
Sounds like what we watched with him in Washington, that he's a gamer and he's a tough guy and he got the daylights beaten out of him with 65 sacks on the season. And that's probably the least surprising answer he could give.
Yeah, he is. He's a tough guy. There's no question about it. And you just saw him when he came in here and on the road, just seemed very unfazed. Now you go and look at his stats, and then you look at, like, his highlight films, and then you go put on the interception roll where he had 4 interceptions, and I think he was sacked, like, 7 times in a game against Buffalo. And then all of a sudden you go, okay, somewhere in between there is Sam Howell. But, you know, you look at he had more attempts than anybody in the NFL. He had more interceptions than anyone in the NFL. And I think it's interesting the last 2 years, 1 touchdown, 1 interception in 22. 21 touchdowns, 21 interceptions in 23. So he likes to spread it around a little bit. But, yeah, this is I think he's a good football player. And if you look at, you know, his toughness, that's definitely a thing for him. And I think it's not – and whenever you talk about toughness, it's not just physical toughness. It's emotional toughness, not complaining, you know, being a guy who is going to be a stand-up, you know, leader for the rest of the team, an example, things like that.
Yeah, and he's a guy that they obviously have plans for him beyond just being a backup. I don't think you'd make that move with the draft capital that they currently don't have after that move. They still had 2 picks, but they moved down in each round. They traded a 3rd and 5th and got a 4th and a 6th. So to me, that represents a level of intention about his future with this team, not just beyond being just Geno's backup this season, because we've talked about it before. I feel like that $38.5 million cap hit that is attached to Geno next season potentially is untenable unless he plays out of his mind and they say, hey, we need to extend him for a few more years and spread this out and what have you. But I don't know. That's a deal that I know financially speaking, he's cheaper than Drew. He's only owed just over $2 million for the next 2 years. So on that aspect, it's better. But just in terms of what they gave up draft-wise, to me, represents more intention with him.
Yeah, I think, look, that's the case. I mean, I know it made big news back in New York when John Schneider talked about Drew Lock going back to compete with Daniel Jones, but that's just the case for every – you want this kind of competition. You want a guy who might be able to push Geno a little bit, and I think you're right. If he has a phenomenal year, it's a big year for Geno, I think. Now, we'll see what we get out of Sam Howell, and I don't think he's going to be pounding on the door anytime soon. But if you look at Geno and the kind of season he has, you know, like you said, after this season, if he
he better live up to the amount of money that they're going to be paying him.
You brought up his interceptions and his sacks. He talked about how he wants to clean all of that part of his game up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the interceptions, you know, got to do a better job. And I think there were some times where we were down in some games and then I was just trying to be a little aggressive. And at times, maybe just trying to do a little too much, trying to give us a chance. But got to be smarter. We got to play smarter football. Got to play winning football. And at times I was doing it. You know, just got to do it at a more consistent rate. And I feel confident about my ability to do that. It's just a matter of if I get an opportunity, I got to go out there and show it.
Thing I always marvel at is that these would be good stats if you were talking about the 1970s. He had 63% completion percentage, and you know there's lots of times where you had more interceptions than touchdowns. But yeah, the only reason I bring it up, he's kind of an old school, kind of a throwback guy. Obviously, he wants to get the interceptions down, but you know I kind of worry about him taking 65 hits. So I mean that's and a lot of that. It's not always that the offensive line is bad. A lot of it is that he decides to extend a play, and you know he puts lots of pressure on his offensive line by just staying alive and moving around and you know moving around the pocket. But I don't know. I think the biggest question on all of this still is Geno, as to whether or not he's the hardest for me to evaluate based on the amount he gets paid and going to get paid versus how he's performed. And if you went back 2 years ago, I'd have said, no, that's definitely he's worth everything. You know, I think he's going to be your franchise quarterback for at least the next 2 or 3 years. But last year, there were some question marks raised. But still, it doesn't keep me from thinking that every single other than like Mahomes, all right, or maybe Justin Herbert, for the most part, more than half the teams, there's a true competition going on at quarterback. And this is a guy that John Schneider thinks will push Geno a little bit.
Maybe he will. Maybe he will. Maybe Geno comes out and has the season of his life and they feel compelled to extend him, you know, to you know, first of all, to lessen the damage of the cap hit. But maybe they just feel like, hey, this buys us a little more time. We get him for another, we extend it by 2 years or something. I don't know what they do, but something along those lines. And Sam Howell gets that much more chance to develop, or maybe he moves on. Who knows? But I think that would be a best case scenario. If he plays so well that they feel compelled to bring him back, that's a win, right? It shouldn't matter who the guy is or what his name is. If he's playing that well, you know, like, we got to keep this guy. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I just remember we asked John, you know, what do you see in Sam Howell? And he was like, he's just a really good football player.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure exactly what it is about him, but he is definitely a tough guy. No question about it. And I also, a lot of it is how you're situated mentally as far as being a leader on the team. And I'm sure you saw a lot of examples of good leadership from him as well.
All right, coming up, one injury might have changed the entire course of the Mariners offseason. We'll get into that in What If Wednesday. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What?
What?
What? What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett. We'll do Best of the Rest coming up at 4 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, it's the hypothetical we throw out there each and every week on Wednesdays, What If Wednesday. Today's What If question is, what if Robbie Ray didn't get hurt last season? Would he still be on the team this year?
Yeah, I think he would have crushed it. You know, and I don't know how he's going to come out of this this surgery, and you know, he'll hear from John Stanton about it, but I thought going into last year, just watching him throw and spraying, I was like, I think this guy might be, you know, the chance for the Cy Young winner in the AL. And, you know, he looked like he was in his best shape, which is saying a lot because the guy seems like he's always in shape. And, it's a real shame. But, you know, who wouldn't have developed if he would have been healthy the entire year? Would have been, I guess, Miller, maybe, or, you know, you got more development.
It would have been Wu. I think Wu.
Was Wu the last one they brought in?
He's the one with the least amount of time as a pitcher. He's got the least experience of the two. So I think Miller was ahead of him. Excuse me. But Yeah, I agree. I think had the injury never happened, he looked like he was set up and primed for a great season. Everybody was marveling over him in spring training when we were there last year, just watching his workouts and the velocity. Everything was just lined up, and people were really, by people, I mean his teammates, the coaches, everybody just very excited about what was to come for him. And obviously the injury got in the way. And we heard this from John Stanton yesterday when he did his interview with King 5, talking about Robbie Ray, and they traded him because he was going to miss a large part of this season.
The decisions we made was we had some players who had contracts for the 24 season that weren't going to be able to contribute to the team on the field. I think Robbie Ray walks on water. I'm a huge fan of Evan White. I think those are great people, and I love to have them associated with the team. But Robbie had Tommy John surgery, and you know, the only thing I know for sure about Tommy John surgery is the recovery takes longer than you think it's going to. And we knew that the Tommy John surgery was probably going to keep Robbie out at least through July, maybe August. And so we're now in a position where we've got, you know, frankly, $23 million associated with a guy who isn't going to be able to contribute 4 of the 6 months of the season. Evan, similarly.
Evan White.
Yeah, Evan. You're talking about Evan White. And it's, yeah. You know, we talked to Evan White, you know, Trammell. I mean, Taylor Trammell is just one of, you know, when you think about guys that you really like and really wish they would have made it, those are a couple of the names. Yeah. Evan White was a wizard at first base. But
very good defensively.
Yeah.
Very good.
But, you know, he talked about him in the same breath as Robbie Ray, as being a huge fan of his. And I remember when they signed him, he was, you know, there was a big part of the Zoom call that, you know, he had with him and his wife and the team, and they loved him. They loved everything about him. And it sounded like in a very short time, Robbie Ray became a leader. But I mean, did you see him poised for that kind of a, you know, like a Cy Young type of year? I kind of thought that's what we saw down in spring training.
Yeah, I mean, physically he looked leaner than he had. He looked like he just was in a different mindset. Not that he wasn't, you know, the year before, that he wasn't in a great mindset and competitive and all that. It just seemed to be a concerted effort to, I don't know, his physical appearance looked different. Again, his velocity was a little bit different, and everybody just was, the excitement was sort of contagious, you know, just hearing others talk about him, and that sort of carried over to me a little bit. So if he's healthy, yeah, I mean, obviously he's proven it. He's won the Cy Young before. He's got the stuff to do it. He looked like he was primed for, if it wasn't going to be a Cy Young, it was going to be a good season. There was a reason to look forward to him. I will say that, whether it was going to end with the Cy Young or not, who knows, but there was a reason to be excited about what he was going to be. And it was unfortunate because he's a guy that, as we talked about, they loved him. For a guy that was here that for such a short amount of time, the impact and impression he made on his teammates and the front office and everybody was pretty impressive.
You know, it's funny, though. You don't really, like, feel like there's a lack of leadership, though, on this team now. I mean, there's plenty of guys to fill that void. I mean, you got a little bit of that when Sewald, I don't know how much of a leader he was, but it seemed like in the bullpen, everybody kind of looked up to him. Remember, he was very frank about, yeah, I got 2 pitches and that's it, you know, and it just, he's very humble, and those are typically the guys that that lead the way. But you look at, yeah, the absence of Robbie Ray, as far as the, you know, like John said, he walks on water, according to him, but it's not like you have a dearth of leadership in that clubhouse. I mean, there's all kinds of guys like Cal Raleigh and Logan Gilbert in his own way, and
JP, you know, and
Luis Castillo. Julio. Yeah, there's plenty of leadership. So that's the good news there. But I would have loved to have seen Robbie Ray have a complete season last year.
Yeah, well, don't you think they would have made the playoffs?
Yeah.
You missed by a game. Somewhere in there, he picks up a win that, you know, either Wu or Miller didn't pick, and that's not ripping either of those guys, but just his experience, what he brings to the table. You got to believe if he had a completely healthy year, you're a playoff team.
Yeah, we should compile a list of things that happened that kept him out of the playoffs. I mean, they were fairly close. I mean, if Ty France has a Ty France year, if Julio doesn't go and just nosedive at the end of the season, that could have got them in the playoffs. I mean, there was plenty of things, and I don't want to just pin it on one guy, but yeah, you think about with Robbie Ray, probably.
Or even Marco. I mean, yeah. you didn't have Mark. Yeah, all you needed was another win. That was it. Somewhere along the way, somewhere, whether it was Ty France being Ty France with runners in scoring position or Julio being Julio with runners in scoring position. I mean, there were just too many games where we talked about the box score at the end of the night, looking at it where they were 3 for 13 and they stranded 9, or they were, you know, 2 for 11, they stranded 10, or it was just, it seemed that was way too common. So you have to figure if Julio's more even throughout the year, if Ty's Ty, there one of those games, one of them is gonna be a win as opposed to the loss. So yeah, it's
that's a much larger what if Wednesday. How many different things can we find to pick apart that, you know, could have happened? And that's why, you know, we talked about it during last year. I mean, this is one of those series, you know, they're playing Kansas City, it's June or whatever it was, and like they drop a game here or there, it's going to count at the end of the season, but everybody only looks at the end. But yeah, there was lots of things. They were that close that could have led to, you know, them getting to the playoffs last year. They were really close, and in the end, it was really disappointing.
All right, coming up, we've got some, as Lefko calls them, fascinating Mariners and Seahawks. Are they fascinating? Are they? Well, I guess we'll make that.
I was compelled.
You were fascinated.
Your opinion.
We'll get the final judgment on this, Mike.
We'll say whether they're fascinating or not. We'll let everybody jump in on that. Best of the rest coming your way with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.